You're listening to FMGRadio.com. Welcome to Generation Reinvention, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Future, with your host, Brent Green.
Thank you for joining this continuing journey to understand and create an amazing future for Generation Reinvention. I am your host, Brent Green. I am an author, speaker, and marketing consultant focused on the baby boomer generation, and you'll learn why the words I am are central to who I am and this show. 30 years ago, a gifted young actress from the Kansas hinterland risked security and comfort to become part of the movie-making industry in Hollywood. 2 years later, she landed the role of a lifetime and walked onto a soundstage for Steven Spielberg's movie E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Her character, Mary, a smart, funny young mother, was about to change this actress's life as well as a generation's views of modern motherhood. This potent portrayal raised as many questions as it did answers for the rising star. In the 3 decades since her first day of work on the film, these questions have been answered. In her new book, Bright Light, Spiritual Lessons from a Life in Acting, Dee Wallace shares her touching story and wisdom that can help each of us rekindle and nurture the heart light that guides us home to our true self. Bright Light, her third book, follows Dee's emotional, spiritual, and professional journey through triumphs and tragic losses. From the school of hard knocks, tempered by memorable accomplishments as an actress and acting teacher, her journey is a metaphor. Her story contains lessons most of us confront during our journeys through life and aging. And when you think about it from this perspective, Dee Wallace's story is a quintessential boomer journey. In this program, we're going to learn more about her journey, her career, her new book, and some of the lessons she can share with a generation now coming to terms with the inevitabilities of aging, loss, and renewal. So I'd like to welcome to our show, actress, teacher, spiritual healer, Dee Wallace.
Well, I'm pretty impressed with myself after that. What an intro. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And it's a delight to have you here. I really appreciate you taking the time.
So, great to be here.
Thank you. And I look forward to our conversation today. Let me quote you. And you wrote this. I was 8 years old, and I realized the power of creativity, the healing power of talent when it springs from one's truth. I wondered if you could describe for our listeners, Dee, your creative years, particularly the early years when you were just a child and anticipating a future, and how those years have influenced the person you became and who you are today.
Oh, my. Well, I was born into a very poor family, but incredibly creative family. My father actually invented some things, and my mother was a beautiful local actress. She made her living as a secretary, but in her off time, she would go around to the music clubs and the mayor and church and give these, well, what we called then readings, we might call them monologues now, but they were, you know, half an hour, 45-minute presentations that she would give, dramatic and humorous presentations. And so I grew up in a family that was religious, but not terribly dogma religious. It was a Methodist church, and my mom would direct all of the religious plays. My dad would do the scenery, and grandma would do the costumes. And I started out as baby Jesus and ended up as Mary. And that was that was my first acting gig, was baby Jesus. So, you know, I come by my creativity, I think, both naturally, genetically, and because I was surrounded and encouraged by it in my home. And unfortunately, my father was so sensitive and creative that he just, after the war, could not handle the world at all and turned to alcohol. I can't remember really any time in my life that we weren't battling alcohol with him. And, you know, pretty much every night of my life, I rescued my little brother, took him with me, rescued my mom. He never was physically abusive, but very much emotionally and verbally abusive to my mom. And so it was a real childhood of dichotomy of unconditional love, because I always felt really unconditionally loved by both my parents and encouraged. And my father worked for a while for Walt Disney, subsidiary of Disney Comics, and I was the Walt Disney princess, and did a lot of PR with Disney and Robert Wagner and Gene Autry and people like that that came through town, and was the Imperial Margarine princess and did some commercials and things like that. My mom got me into modeling, I think, a lot because, I mean, I made a lot of money for the family so that the family could survive. And so there was this constant, oh my gosh, be careful, we're not safe, we don't have enough, we're barely making it, and oh my gosh, look how much love we have, how much support we have for each other, and how creative we are. And those two messages, but primary messages, became very confusing to me as I journeyed out into my own creative professional life.
So you had not only experience with acting, but you also were involved, well, obviously in modeling as a child, but in dance as well?
Oh, yes. My mother, we couldn't afford dance lessons, but my mother would barter her talents. She would write poetry and read poetry live at the dance recitals to tie the numbers in for my dance teacher. And I think actually she did some bookkeeping for my dance. My mom would do anything and creatively manifested opportunities for all her kids any way that she could. So she would barter things, she would barter her talents, her time. I don't know how she ever created the money to give me these elocution lessons, is what they call them, and where I would also learn how to give dramatic and humorous readings, and I would practice how to speak correctly. You know, she was determined for us that we would rise above our station. And our creativity was the best way to do that.
You also mention your grandmother periodically throughout the book. And what kind of influence did she have?
Well, my grandmother actually raised me because my mom was always at work. I think mom left at 7 a.m. every morning, and we were lucky if she got home by 7 at night and then had to fix dinner and, you know. So grandma raised me. Grandma made all my clothes so that we didn't have to buy them. Grandma took me to and from school. So Grandma became my best friend, my confidant. I mean, I was always very, very close with my mom, but I just hung out more with my grandmother. And all my life, she was an inherent part of my religious teaching. My kind of my backbone, you know. When I went to college, couldn't afford to buy a car, so grandma would let me use her car during the day, and I would drive from Kansas City up to Lawrence, Kansas, and KU, and then drive back every day, and she would have the car, you know, for the afternoon and the evening then. So, wow. You know, everybody in my life gave up an awfully lot. Sorry, it moves me when I talk about it. help me create who I am.
I hear gratitude is what I'm hearing.
Oh, but, yeah, you know. So much love, you know. Just so much love.
And I would like to point out, for those listening, that this is a profound example of the power of a fantastic human being that also is an actress to be able to get clear and present. And we're going to talk about that throughout the program, the ability to be very much into where the emotional feelings are at the moment. But it could be said, Dee, that you can take the woman out of Kansas, but you can't take the Kansas out of the woman.
Never, and never would I want. Never would I want anybody to take the Kansas out of me. I like the hick that I am. I do. I like the fact that I still believe in naivete and the goodness of people. And I love corn on the cob and BLTs. And I'm never going to leave that part of me, ever.
Well, you refer to Kansas periodically throughout your new book. And, of course, you know I'm from Kansas. And those who listen to my show know I'm from Kansas with pride in saying so. And so it's a significant impact. In fact, you wrote, this is from your book, "I kept my word and expected everyone else to keep theirs." That's the way you did it back in Kansas. So I'm kind of curious what some of the lessons are that you feel have propelled you forward through your life that kind of are centered on where we came of age. What kind of lessons do you think?
Well, you know, I just want to speak to that one line there for a minute first. It took me a long time to realize that everybody else didn't keep their word. And what the lesson was around that was it didn't matter. For a long time, I really made it matter. And I wanted to make them wrong, and life was unfair, and blah, blah, blah. And what I ultimately learned, and I talk about this in Bright Light, is ultimately it's just about me. Do I keep my word? Do I expect others to keep theirs? Do I harmonize with that? Or because somebody doesn't, do I put all my focus on that and then keep creating other people that don't so that I can still get the lesson that it doesn't matter? And I think, you know, I speak a lot in the first part of Bright Light about how naive I was. You know, I had never been out of Kansas in my life when I moved to New York. And I had worked two or three jobs that summer to save money, and I had $1,000. Well, my God, in Kansas, how far would that take us in the 60s? You know, you could live a year on $1,000.
So, I did.
Yeah, well, and I got to New York, and in 3 months, you know, $1,000 was history. And but I just knew with my naivete, everything was going to be okay. It was like, okay, well, I'll go to this coffee shop. Okay, well, I'll go to this audition. Okay, well, I'll go over here. And the universe kind of just led me because nobody had programmed me that it wasn't going to work. And so I got down to, you know, those $5, and I called my older brother and said, can I borrow another $1,000? And in the interim that we were trying to create that, I went to a Halloween party, or I went to an audition, actually, met a boy. He took me to a Halloween party, and I was just my bubbly Kansas naive self, right? And at the end of the night, they said, you know, could you come by the office on Monday? We think we'd like to talk to you. And I went, okay, what do you do? And they were some of the biggest agents in New York. And that's kind of how my life just went for 5 years. And they signed me. And 3 weeks later, I booked a United Airlines commercial. I turned around and smiled and made $30,000 in the next 9 months. And wow, Deanna Bowers nice. From Kansas never even knew that this was possible, right? She just knew she had a lot of joy being an actress, and this was a big adventure, and she didn't have any messages that it couldn't happen. And I'm saying, so even if we have the messages, it's up to us to let those messages go and replace them with messages that we can. With, you know, I just want to be in my joy. I just want to be in my happiness. I want to create that for other people in the world. And you know what? I want to make money doing it. So universe, well, get going, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, you mentioned the word naivete, and I understand that because I think when all of us are young, we're naive at some level. But I also think we grew up in a time and in a place where when somebody shook their hand and said they were going to do something, you could pretty much count on it. And I think we've all found out in our own ways that, you know, at some point in life, that's not the way the rest of the world sometimes works. But we're going to take a short break for our sponsors. My guest is Dee Wallace, actress, educator, and spiritual healer. When we come back, we're going to talk more in depth about her new book, Bright Light.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Dee Wallace has more than 130 films and scores of television roles to her credit. Her films range from some of the scariest to some of the funniest ever made, including Cujo, The Howling, 10 with Dudley Moore, you may remember that one, The Frighteners, Critters, and of course E.T. She has starred in 4 television series and more than 400 TV commercials and is one of Hollywood's most sought-after TV guest stars. She is also an adored inspirational speaker, spiritual teacher, and healer. I have to insert one question in here because it relates back to our discussion of your childhood and all the fantastic support you got from your family in terms of educating you and acting and so forth. And I land back on the word dance because I understand there is some effort afoot to get you involved in Dancing with Stars.
Yes, there's an effort afoot. And I think it would be a great challenge. I would definitely tackle that challenge if they would offer it to me. I'm not sure I'm racy enough for the show, but I started out as a dancer and was a trained dancer. Actually danced with a couple of ballet companies in Kansas City, but I was a very small pond, you know, big fish kind of story. And ultimately, my dance teacher took me aside in her thick German accent and said, "Dee, you'll always be good, but you're never going to be great. Look somewhere else." And she did me a huge favor because I turned to acting, which is the next thing I knew. I mean, you know, I got my teaching degree, and I taught a year of high school, and I've been a teacher all my life. And to this day, my favorite pastime is dancing. We go dancing every week, my boyfriend and I, and I use my dance training in absolutely every acting role I've ever done. My body just automatically takes on whatever the character is, so it served me well, and yes, I would like to do Dancing with the Stars. I'm claiming that. Why not?
Well, and there's a Facebook page, right? Or something to that effect?
There is a Facebook page. Actually, I think you can also, if you just go to my website, iamdwallace.com, There's the link for the Dancing with the Stars, and that's where you can find absolutely everything about me, my radio shows, my healing seminars, my webinars. Everything is right there at IamDWallace.com. I like the way you started that show.
Well, hey,
with
listen,
the I am.
I really would look forward to seeing you on Dancing with the Stars. You would be fabulous. And it's actually true that Kirstie Alley just finished a run, and it may not be known by our listeners, but Kirstie Alley was at the University of Kansas at the same time you and I were,
yep.
as well as Don Johnson. So there was something going on. There was something in the water in Lawrence, Kansas at that particular time with so many creative people who ended up very well known as Hollywood celebrities. So
Ed Asner's from Kansas City too, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are a number of people, but I thought it was interesting that we were walking the same campus at the same time.
Yeah.
We didn't know each other, but, you know, who knows? We were passing Kirstie and Don and everybody else, and guess what happened after that? But I want to focus on your book. I'm going to read something from your book. Quote, "I can create an intention or a plan to reach a goal, but then release it and allow my greater energy to flow through me and create what it will." Now, to me, that seemed like a very fundamental statement, a philosophy, a view of things that I saw periodically throughout the book. So maybe you can respond to that and tell us a little bit about Bright Light.
Well, Bright Light, it was a miraculous moment when I realized that this amazing acting technique that I use was pretty much a metaphor for the creation process. And that's how Bright Light, the idea of Bright Light, came together. That, oh, my knowing is that everybody makes this creation stuff a lot harder to understand than it is. And I thought, how awesome if I could, you know, weave my acting career and tell all the great stories of all my great directors and co-stars and, you know, story sets and everything, along with this journey of my self-discovery and what I've learned about creating in this lifetime, which is what I believe we're all here to do, is simply come in and learn how to manipulate energy. That's what we're here to do. And so as I started writing Bright Light, my daddy used to call me his Bright Light. And it occurred to me that I had really lost mine for about 20 years. That I mean, we can't ever lose our light totally, because that's what we are, is light. But I had turned it down, put it under a barrel, because I thought, like all of us think, when we get hurt, raped, abused, humiliated by the world, I'll make myself smaller, and that way I'll be safe. And so that's how Bright Light came together. And I realized in my acting technique, what we did was we read the script, and it's Charles Conrad's technique that I'm talking about that really changed my life as an actor. We would read the script one time so that our conscious minds didn't have very much control over anything, which is the antithesis of a lot of acting techniques, by the way. And then it was based on energy, and we learned a lot about energy in Charles' class. But we would raise our energy to an extremely high level. And what does that do? It makes you bypass your conscious mind. And it opens up your channel so that information not available to you when your channel is closed comes in and moves through you. Well, that's pretty much as simple as creation gets. So this is what I don't want. This is what I want. I'm going to direct what I want, because as the person using the energy available to you, you must direct it. The I am presence must be directed for it to create what you want. Otherwise, it just creates haphazardly by genetics and things that you hear and messages that you get and fears that you have. So as an actor, I would go, all right, well, I am directing myself then to be this character, to envelop this character. I am, you know, let's say a woman with polio who's 30 years old and blah, 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 blah. And then I get out of the way. And what happened in the studio was nothing short of miraculous. Scene after scene after scene after scene. And it was way beyond acting. It was literally people becoming other people in front of your eyes with no work at all, but a definite technique as to how to give themselves over to a greater truth of the character they were bringing in. And that's what we need to do with the creation process. This is what I don't want. What I don't want is a lack of money. So what do I want? I want a plethora of money. Okay, so I'm going to claim that. That's who I am. I am a person creating more than enough money. I am the vibration itself that creates more than enough money in my life. I'm going to choose to be in harmony with more than enough money in every way I can. And now, you know, universe, what I want, bring it on. I'm turning it over to you. And it's pretty much really that simple. If you don't like what you've made out of your Play-Doh, scrunch it up and make something else. The universe will respond to that. But, you know, we keep going, I hate money, I resent money, I don't have enough money, I wish I wasn't so stressed out about money. Could I have some more money, please? And it doesn't harmonize, right? So the universe can't really deliver it to you if you're not in harmony. It's all about you. It's all about you and your joy and being happy. And if that sounds Pollyanna, oh, well, you know, that's your problem out there, because I know that it works. I know the simplicity of being in joy and being in love with yourself and your life and life in general is what creates for all of us. My Baptist preacher came out there for a minute, didn't it?
No. No, actually, you described in an eloquent way a lot of the things that you have to teach with your book, Bright Light. For those listening, first of all, I would encourage you to pick up this book. No surprise there. There's a lot of wisdom in it, but something else is in it, and it's an incredible story. Dee has struggled with many losses. We think of sometimes idealize our Hollywood celebrities as their lives must be perfect in relationship to my life. But she's experienced the suicide of her creative but alcoholic father. She mentioned that. She experienced marginalization by the big studios right after E.T. was made. She may tell us a little more about that. She had to deal with her own infertility when she was trying to have her first child, which she eventually did. And then, of course, the loss of her dear husband and fellow actor, Christopher Stone. Many would become totally diminished by this loss, this great sense of conflict and challenge that you've had throughout your life, Dee. But you have not been diminished by it. You've learned not to be. Why not?
Well, you know, I was diminished by it. And then I learned that it was only me that could create the expansion again. And when I really got that, I moved back into my empowerment. Now, I think the fact that I had a 7-year-old daughter that I loved beyond life itself helped, because, you know, I know I talk in the book about when I went in and looked at her and I said, you know, for her, I can do anything. For her, I have to get myself back. And I didn't realize at the moment that it was really me that I had to get myself back for. But she was the catalyst, I think, that created the strength to allow me to do that. And I just, I just want people to know, you know, I was down about as far as somebody can get. And I talk about this in Bright Light. I just hit the floor, railing at God and said, I don't want to be this way anymore. And these words are very important. I don't want to be a victim. I want my light back. I want a way we can heal ourselves. And those words are very important because ask and you receive. So what this work is all about, what the book is all about, what my message is all about, is we must take responsibility for ourselves. We must. We're the only ones that can turn our light back up, shine our light, be the creative people we are, be the powerful, magnificent forces on this earth that we are, that we came to be. We're the only ones that can do it. My dad can't bring himself back. The people that hurt me in business are not going to undo what they did. You know, I am the only strength that can create me again. And I just want to invite everybody, whomever took your light away, whomever or whatever you gave your power to, thinking that it diminished you or you couldn't be the great soul that you are. It's not true. Just create again. Create yourself again in this moment right now.
And one of the best ways to begin that process, that journey, is to learn from Dee. Read about her story. Read about her miraculous life in the sense of the things that she's had to confront and the thing that, you know, the things that she's overcome. I'll leave this segment with this quote from Dee. I had a formula for success in acting in life: intention, energy, direction, relaxation, and flow. That sums it up. But as easy it is to say, it's much more difficult to live. When we come back, I'm going to talk with Dee Wallace about being a part of a generation and what that has meant and what it means. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Be sure to join us at fmguniversity.com. That's where we can turn your passion into business within 30 days, put some fun back into your life, show you how to make money, and do good for yourself and others. That's why we are called FMG, Fun Money Good. Get started today. Go to fmguniversity.com.
One of my books, Marketing to Leading Edge Baby Boomers, considers boomers and creativity in one chapter. When boomers grew up, we were surrounded by a creative revolution. So in music, we had Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, the Eagles, Fleetwood Mac. In fine arts, we learned names like David Hockney and Andy Warhol and Peter Max, who I had an opportunity to spend a day with several years ago. In theater, we had fantastic plays such as Hair and Jesus Christ Superstar as examples. In fact, from my book, a quote from my book, creativity became the fuel of the cultural engine, propelling many rapid changes in the social contract. Many would-be boomer artisans adopted a creative outlet to help discover a more authentic and meaningful way of living. Creativity and art are in the baby boomer DNA. How might all of this creative activity going around us when we were young, Dee, might have influenced you, the external creativity and the arts and music and so forth? Were you inspired?
Well, I think vibrationally, everybody was inspired. You know, we're all a part of the collective consciousness. So anything that's put back into it has to affect us. And the word that came to me as you were reading that was freedom. We were given permission during that time to be free and to more freely look at who we were and our joy and invited to let go of a lot of rules and regulations that had been confining our creativity. And I want to point out now that when I say creativity, we are all creative beings. Life itself is creation. So any creativity that goes on around us fuels the creation of the very life force that we are. So throughout history, we have been, the Age of Enlightenment, for example, and then we go back into the Dark Ages. And then we have 60s and expansion and creativity and openness and new ideas and new thought. And then everybody gets scared, and then we close it down again, right? And put into effect more rules and more regulations. And this is the time now. This is what 2011 is all about, going into 2012. There are no rules and regulations anymore, not energetically. And the more we have to live by the old rules and regulations and abide by the old rules and regulations, the more we are going to be held down in our life. And I think we can take great lessons from the 60s and the Age of Enlightenment, which is just let people create. Let people create. Give them the freedom to create the way expansively as they need to do.
Very good advice. Well, we were both at the University of Kansas, and it was a very activist university during the late 60s. Did you have time to participate in any of the protest movements or the protest marches that occurred on the campus, or because of your commuting, did you have to go and come and couldn't really be a part of that?
Yeah, my whole life was get up, drive, take as many classes as I can, drive back, and go to work. That was pretty much my life, and I interestingly enough, have never been called to politics or being too politically active. And the more I get into the healing work there, it's becoming very clear that I need to get involved in some spiritual aspects of politics. I just taught this big two-day seminar, first seminar on how to do my work, how to accredit people in the work that I do. And part of the information that came through around a subject, and we had, we weren't doing work at all around America, but the message came through that there's no way you can separate God and America. It's not possible. And I went, well, now wait. So this isn't a religious class, right? And it's not a political class. Why is this coming in? Because the ultimate politics that America was based on is new thought, unlimited thought of freedom. Hmm. And in that way, that is also the description of God. And so ultimately, energetically and vibrationally, you cannot dismember the two because it's the same thing.
Huh.
Now, I'm not talking about where we have become or what we've done, or but the original basic intention and energy that America was based on was the unlimited thought and possibility of freedom, which is ultimately, if you look at God as energy, and energy that loves you unconditionally and will allow you to create whatever you want without judgment or lack of love, that's really the highest, for me, the highest description of God, which is the same thing.
Huh. Very, very interesting. Very interesting. And that word freedom again. In fact, I'm going to come back to that word freedom when we talk in our last segment. But I want to keep my train of thought here, because one of the things that happened when we were in college around the same time is modern feminism. It was a byproduct of the consciousness revolutions during our college years. So how did the feminist movement affect who you became, perhaps who you are right now?
Well, I wish I had burned a bra, but I never did. You know, I think the feminist movement in the 60s was the first, of course, you know, there are many of us going, okay, is there a guy that can open a bloody door for me now? So we're looking at bringing the balance now. And I have to tell you, that's the most important thing that you can focus on right now, is directing the balance of masculine, feminine, and child energy within you. If that's not in balance, then creation, the way you want it to manifest, cannot happen. So in the 60s, really, it was the beginning of, wait a minute, the divine feminine has been buried way too long. And we've got to be conscious and aware again that the divine feminine is absolutely the core of creation. And so the feminine voice has to have a voice. I mean, you know, and the precursor to that, of course, was the women's suffragette movement. So for eons and centuries now, the divine feminine voice has been saying, all right, it's time for me to come back. It's time for me to come back. Because we are erroneously taught to go to our minds to figure stuff out, to see how to create something, okay? And then if we're lucky, is there some kind of creativity that I can put together with that? And we have it, as my mother used to say, bass backwards. You go to the divine idea, the instinct, the intuition, what you're told, and then you go to your mind and the power of the mind and direct it. How then can I create this divine idea? Einstein used to speak about that all the time, that he got so much of his big breakthroughs when he went into his imagination. He was getting the divine guidance and then applying that with the power of the doing of the masculine. And when, just like in a baby, the seed and the sperm, the masculine, feminine, come together, the child is instantaneously in that moment present also. So the creation is already made. The moment the masculine and feminine are in balance and in harmony and coming together. And so it was an incredibly important movement for, we called it the women's movement, but really it was a movement to bring awareness back to the divine feminine energy that had to be in place for the creation of the world that we wanted. And yeah, I go see ahead.
Well, you know, in reading your book and understanding now your journey, the journey you started from Kansas City, Kansas, all the way to Hollywood, is stopping off at New York in between and doing that all on your own. You know, to me, that was a person who had been liberated from a lot of the constraints, because I know my sister, who was runner-up to Miss Kansas and was invited to appear on Broadway, was about 7 years older than I am and was very reticent to take that kind of liberty and initiate her two true dreams, because she was supposed to be married at 21 and have three kids by 25.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And she was supposed to live in Topeka, Kansas, and be a dental assistant instead of this marvelous actress that she truly was. You put that 7 years later, and you put that in a generation of women, and suddenly somebody like a Dee Wallace takes off into the world on her own and creates a remarkable career. To me, that speaks to modern feminism.
Well, when you put it that way, I would agree. And I have to tell you, there was always something in me that, you know, I did get a teaching degree. So, and these are my mother's words, you'd have something to fall back on.
Right.
Something to be safe with. Right. And so I did that, and I taught, and I was married. I was married at 19 because the only way that you could get out of the house and still be a good girl in Kansas City, in a family like mine was to get married. So I did. And three years later, it was annulled. You know,
there was something
in me, though, that said, I am not going to stay in a marriage that doesn't work. There's more to do with me. There's more joy to find. There was that spark that was so great that I could not play by the limiting rules of that Midwestern mentality. I just couldn't. And that's not to say that your sister didn't take her creativity and her love and touch as many lives being a dental assistant.
Well,
you know?
She didn't actually stay in that role. That's where she landed after returning home from the University of Kansas. But she had to leave home by getting married. That was the only way out. The point is that I don't think she felt as free to pursue her dreams, certainly on her own, because she'd always been very protected, you know, through childhood and certain expectations for young women. They certainly didn't strike off on their own at age 21.
I want to give some people some insight here because I think it's important.
Yeah.
So you really can see how my troubled childhood of having to take care of my mom, having to work to make money, having to protect my little brother, that was grooming me to give me the strength to know that I could take care of myself. And so what we call hardships are oftentimes, and I just had this amazing regression session with Dolores Cannon, and she asked me when I was under, so why did your dad have to kill himself? What do you think the lesson was that for you was? And I said, he had to leave. He had to leave so I could move into my own power. And my husband had to leave at 55 because Chris was my protector. As long as I was with Chris, I felt safe. If I couldn't handle something, I would turn it over to Chris. Chris had to leave so I could understand my own power in this life. And if there's a message I want everybody to get, it's that we've made the wrong connection. You do not have to leave the love of who you are to be powerful. Indeed, your love and the love that you are is your power. So do not be afraid to go out into this world and be powerful through love. It's the greatest creation in the world.
Absolutely. And I'll leave this segment with a quote from UD from the book. We're all trying to get home to the authenticity of who we are, where we feel safe, secure, and loved in this world. When we come back, we're going to talk with Dee Wallace a little bit about her thoughts about the future for a generation. Stick around.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Dee Wallace, you are indeed a bright light for our generation. I wonder what you think is coming for us. Those who defined youth culture like never before when we were young. What might be in store for an elder culture? What do you think is coming as this generation ages?
What I know is whatever you want to be in store for you is what will be. If we could get the simplicity of that, do you understand where if you can think of the world as your own virtual reality game, you can literally create through any perception you have your life. So I would start asking myself, what perceptions do I hold that empower me? What perceptions do I hold that diminish my light? And really, what do I want the world to be? Because I know we hear it all the time, and it's a mind bender, but it's all an illusion. And you really can create the life you want, but you have to hold the perspective of what that is. So, you know, a lot in my healing work, people will go, well, what about the dark side? Well, what about, you know, negative energy? Well, what if I'm affected by that? Well, you see, I have no belief in that at all. I have no belief in the dark side. And so in my life, the dark side never gets created.
Well, what are your hopes, broadly speaking, not only for individuals? Obviously, your life is dedicated to empowering individuals, being both a teacher and a healer. But what are your hopes, broadly speaking, that this vast number of baby boomers, which now represent about 78 million people in the United States, almost the entire generation is passing the age of 50. They will all have passed the age of 50 in another 3 years. What are your hopes that our generation might yet accomplish?
Well, my hopes are that we remember the truth that we discovered when we were young, and not become the old people who buy all of the old incorrect messages. You know, you don't have to get sick because you get older. You can get healthier every day, but not if you don't know that. I just see so many of us that were so vital and knew so much back then buying into the norm of the limitation now. We're stronger than that. We know more than that. We created the whole shift. And
Bravo.
So my question to everybody is, why the hell are we leaving what we know? We know that we're freedom, you know. We know that we are freedom and can create freedom. We know that we have the strongest voice when we come together to create. I mean, look at all of the things that we passed, the new thought, the new innovations of society that we brought about. We created all that, guys. Why are you buying that you have to be sick now? Why are you buying all the fear that you're not going to have enough to live the rest of your life on? Why are you buying all this BS that we are being handed? Because that's disempowering our voice, and our voice is our creation.
Well, you know, this word freedom, I told you I would come back to it because you summarized the experience of growing into your teen years in the 60s as freedom. And I think that's a pretty good word to summarize it. There was a lot of freeing of our thinking. And in my own presentations, in fact, I gave one in Amsterdam about a year ago, and I said, I don't know what the actual winning products are going to be, because when we decide something, generationally speaking, we create businesses like McDonald's, Starbucks, and so forth. But I said, I believe the theme is going to be freedom, the theme going forward. Yet a significant number of our peers are struggling right now, whether it's upside down home mortgages or experiencing the reality of age discrimination, unemployment, perhaps they've lost businesses. So what can you offer those who are searching for a new way of living now and in the future? I think you've already spoken to that, but.
Well, I'm saying that, okay, we have to create ourselves first. We have to create ourselves as freedom first. And I think that's why we're having some of these things happening. It works on three levels, they're saying. The first level is we're buying what we're being told, that's a reality that we can't change. Well, we know that we create our reality by what we focus on and what we know. Okay? So we're not going to create a world where everybody is safe and secure financially while we keep buying into the messages of the government that we're going downhill, we're losing, we're, you know, it's not safe, there's not enough money, blah, blah, blah. You can't have both creations at the same time. You know, the second part of that is that we have to get the message, all of us, that the things we have do not define the freedom that we are. And once you get that message, you know, people say, yeah, well, money can't make you happy. Well, it doesn't make you unhappy either. Your consciousness around the money makes you happy or unhappy. You know, my little cleaning girl from Guatemala that I was instrumental in getting her citizenship and helping her do that and everything, you know, she has a two-room apartment, but she comes in and sees me every week and sings the entire day. So my good friends who live in Philadelphia in Bucks County has a three-level house, right, and 3 acres of land, and they worry all the time. So they've got the stuff, and they live in the experience of not having it, of being in fear of lack. She doesn't have it and lives in the experience that everything's great and joyful and full of love in her life. I don't know, which one do you want to be? It's possible to have the stuff and live in the knowing of it and the joy of it, but it's not about the stuff, which is, by the way, my next book. It's called Getting Stuff. But, you know, we have to be in harmony. That's what I'm saying. Right now, we're not in harmony with knowing that we're okay and we have enough. We're in fear that we're not okay, and in fear that we're not going to have enough, and in fear that we're not going to be okay in our later years. And all that fear is going to create it perfectly for us.
So you would definitely encourage our peers to take a look at, you know, where are they coming from? Are they coming from a place of fear? Are they coming from a place of freedom?
Yes, and knowing that they are the creation of themselves and their lives. It's not, the government's not creating you. And your parents aren't creating you anymore, unless you're allowing it. You know? And your genetics don't have to create you anymore. You are the creation of you. And you do that by shining your bright light and being the powerful force in the world that you are. Take charge, move out of your fear, move into your knowing, and start saying exactly what you want.
I think that is the kind of advice we need. And obviously, we can hear it, we can learn from it, but I think for most of us, it takes a little practice. And that practice can occur by getting in touch with Dee Wallace. And you can get in touch with Dee Wallace by going to her primary website, imdwallace.com, and that will provide you a portal to her radio shows, to her books, to her personal appearances, which I guess you are doing extensively right now around the country.
I am. I've been on tour with the amazing Dolores Cannon, and that's coming to an end. I'm in Sedona right now with her, and then I'll be in Santa Fe with Jeffrey Hoppe, which is going to be an amazing weekend. So if you're around Santa Fe, please come and join us.
Well, that would be in the week following this particular podcast, which is obviously going to be, we'll move beyond that because people will be hearing this podcast 6 months from now. And Dee will be places. I just met her three weeks ago in Denver at the Tattered Cover Bookstore. So I encourage you to check this out. Dee has, is it two radio programs, correct?
Yes, Mondays at 5 p.m. Pacific and Thursdays at 8 a.m. They're both free call-in shows. If you have a block in your anywhere in your life and you want discernment and understanding about how to move through it, come join us. It's a pretty amazing group.
I, again, encourage our listeners to do just that and to keep an eye on Dee Wallace, because I think she is a powerful metaphor for our generation in so many ways. And that's what struck me about having her on this program. And I so much appreciate your taking the time to be on the program today, Dee.
It's been a great joy, just a great joy. Thank you so much for being so conscious in creating your questions and the interview. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you. I very much appreciate that too, Dee. Well, I want to thank our listeners for joining the show as always. You can post your comments and your questions on my Facebook page, which is, of course, is facebook.com and Brent Green Denver. Or you can follow me and send direct messages to Twitter @ Boomer Marketing. My blog, now beginning its 6th year, presents a continuing conversation about the boomer future, and that's at boomers.typepad.com. So tell your friends, colleagues, and clients about a worldwide boomer revolution. It's a lot about freedom, and we discuss it here weekly, and we call it Generation Reinvention.
You've been listening to Generation Reinvention with your host, Brent Green. Visit Brent at his website at generationreinvention.com. And for archive shows, be sure to visit his show page here on the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is, have fun, make money.